So today we get a parable in the gospel, and it's really hard to see the twist. This feels so straightforward to me. This rich man has had a good harvest, and so of course he needs good storage for his harvest. He has earned it. He deserves to reap the benefits. Why is Jesus so hard on him? Everyone needs to make a living. This is the way the modern world continues to be built. You work, you save, at some point in your life, you get to rest. And if you don't have those barns, someday you could have to depend on others. And that is so against everything the American dream has built into our DNA. Even here at Faith Lutheran, as a part of my benefits package, you all are contributing to my retirement fund, including a housing equity fund, which is important because while the parsonage is lovely and my family is so grateful for the housing equity means that we are still working towards that barn at the end of my retirement, a metaphorical bigger barn. And yet Jesus' message today is offering something so radically different. It is so radical, it is hard for me to visualize this concept actually existing or working in the real world. And yet, it's not a new concept. It goes all the way back to those Israelites in the wilderness, post-Exodus and the plagues, you know, Red Sea, all of that. These Israelites, newly freed slaves, were in the wilderness trying to figure out what it meant to be God's people. And God provides for them. God creates this way of life that God envisions for God's people, where manna is gathered in the morning, where people have the food they need for that day, and when they go to bed that night, their baskets are empty, and yet they trust that manna will be there the next day. And yet, even in the stories of the wilderness, the people can't trust this plan. They hoard it, and it becomes moldy, and God gets mad. And so the people try again. It's a hard lesson, perhaps an impossible lesson, to be dependent on anyone else other than ourselves. To try and lean into this song, "There is enough, and some to share." And yet, I'd like to think that the church can be a place where we can experiment, where we can envision and dream and lead into this promise of daily bread, of abundance, and reflect together what really is enough. What do we actually need? And what actually do we think is ours that actually belongs to our neighbors? For God tells this rich man at the end of the parable, "You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?" Now this summer, I've invited you all to read this little book with me, The Service Berry. Look how thin that is, and there's pictures. The font is pretty big. I have 3 copies left, and I don't want them to be there at the end of the day. Somebody take them. But Robin Wall Kilmer invites us to think about this concept of enoughness, abundance, the gift economy of the natural world, and what this could possibly look like for us humans too. I don't want to spoil the book. It's only 100 pages, but I'm going to give you one example from it, okay? I still want you to read the book. But she writes about this problem of deciding what to do with abundance. And she found this example in Lewis Hyde's book, The Gift. Daniel Everett is a linguist who observed this hunter-gatherer community in the Brazilian rainforest. And he observed that a hunter has brought home a sizable kill, far too much to be eaten by his family. And the researcher asked him how he would store the excess. Smoking and drying technologies were well known. Storing was possible. But the hunter was puzzled by that question. Store the meat? Why would he do that? Instead, he sent an invitation to a feast, and soon the neighboring families were gathered around his fire until every last morsel was consumed. This seemed a maladaptive behavior to the anthropologist, who asked him again, given the uncertainty of meat in the forest, why didn't the hunter store the meat for himself? Which was what the economic system of his home culture would predict. Store my meat. I store my meat in the belly of my brother, replied the hunter. Can we consider an alternative way of organizing ourselves to sustain life? In a gift economy, wealth is understood as having enough to share, and the practice of dealing with abundance is to give it away. Status is determined not by how much one accumulates, but by how much one gives away. The currency in a gift economy is relationship, which is expressed as gratitude, as interdependence, and the ongoing cycles of reciprocity. That's wild, right? Seems impossible. And yet, in some places around the world, in many examples in the natural world, this actually exists. This is what Jesus is talking about in his parable. The field is not abundant for the benefit of this one rich person. The field is abundant for the sake of the whole community, for interdependence in this ongoing cycle of reciprocity. In God's economy, grace is the gift. Daily bread is a gift, not meant to be hoarded, but shared. And I know it's freaking hard to see things through this lens. It is so hard to trust this because we all know it doesn't always work out in this beautiful way. There are seasons of drought and bugs and terrible harvests. There is disease and greed. But what if? What if we could imagine we can actually live a little bit this way? Wouldn't that worry line on our brow disappear? Perhaps we would all sleep a little better at night, be less anxious about our kids and our bank accounts, and have less guilt about those struggling to get by that we see on the streets because, well, they wouldn't be there anymore. Now, I've seen this play out, this gift economy play out in my life recently in two different ways. So the first example is the strawberry patch. So in front of our parsonage, we have a patch of strawberry plants. You know, we had one in Minneapolis, and so when we moved here in the spring of 2023, it was among many native plant sales. And so we picked up a few strawberry plants right away. They're native, they're actually rain garden plants, they're really good for the soil, but they struggled. It is hot here, no one told me that, how hot it is here. I don't think we got any fruit that first summer. And then last spring, a neighbor on the listserv posted that he was thinning out his strawberry plants, and so we added some more. And things started to fill in, but as each fruit ripened, someone nibbled on it before we could pick it. So annoying. So Mike made this like netting system to go on top of it, and the squirrels still found a way in. It was maddening. So this spring, we were prepared. The netting system became more elaborate. There were several trips to Home Depot. We got PCV pipes to build the frame and a double layer of netting. But before Mike could finish the project, the fruit started to come in. And so I panicked and I picked some early, a whole quart of strawberries, and we couldn't eat them before they spoiled. Because fresh strawberries like that, they don't last. And so then Mike picked two more quarts, and the chipmunks had their fill too, and the elaborate netting system laid half finished on the grass beside it, because we realized we didn't need it. These strawberry plants were producing enough for everybody, just like the song suggests. There are enough strawberries. There are enough strawberries. There are enough, enough and some to share. It was a beautiful example of this gift economy where we all had what we needed. There was no need to store or hoard. Strawberries, they don't taste good after a couple days anyway, so just eat and enjoy them and celebrate the gift, and then leave a few behind for the rest. My second example of a gift economy that I've seen is our Wednesday night commuter lemonade stand. So Wednesday was the third and final week of this little experiment, and it's just really goofy the way things turned out, because when we started 3 weeks ago, it was really challenging to give the lemonade away. People had a really hard time believing it was free. They honked and they waved and they gave us thumbs up and they kept on driving. And those who stopped offered us money. Yeah, we did get some lemonade. Daniel, you were there on week two, right? And so that first week, we only gave away about half the bottles. So remember, a couple weeks ago, I encouraged you all to take a bottle home and share it. And then week two, I wasn't there, but Daniel, you were. And the Secret Service ended up in our back parking lot. They closed down the neighborhood because someone fancy was here. And so between the security detail and our nosy neighbors, we gave away a few more bottles, which was good. We still got the, this is really free, and like honking and waving. But this week, there seemed to be a pivot point. We did have a few people honk and wave. A few people who said, really, this is free, who tried to give us money. I don't know, maybe it was the combination that it was like so hot out, like it was so hot, that people took it. And they were grateful. We had, the energy was kind of contagious. We even got a God bless you. We had someone who shared, I saw the sign last week, and so I thought, tonight I'm gonna stop by. We're starting to get a reputation. We emptied them all. We have no lemonade left. We even had a few ask for lemonade as we were emptying out the cooler and taking down the tent. I'm beginning to think it takes a while for something free to sink in. Maybe that's something you all know because you come back week after week. We need to take communion every week to remember this is free. This is free. This is for us. It is abundance and forgiveness and grace. It makes me a little sad that our lemonade experiment is over. It wasn't easy, it was awkward at times, but it was really fun to be outside in the parking lot, interacting with the community that drives and bikes and walks by our building every single day. And so it makes me wonder, what's next? How can we continue to share our abundance? Or better yet, how can we share the abundance entrusted to us, knowing that God asks us to give it away? Where does God want us to go next? Who's thirsty? Who's hungry in some sort of need that we have the capacity to engage with? And here's the kicker about it all. Jesus still loves this rich farm landowner, whether he shares or whether he continues to build barns. But in this story, Jesus invites this person by saying their very life hangs in this space of sharing or hoarding. That life that is really life right now in this moment lives in an open hand, in an interdependent relationship with all living things. And so, dear ones, may we accept Jesus' invitation to let go, to give without counting, to let the gifts of this life really sink in and flow through us, to celebrate the abundance in our midst, for it is here for us, it's here for our neighbors, and indeed, it is always more than enough. Amen. Thanks be to God.